Thanks for joining me today. It is Friday, November 16th, 2012. This is Spingola Speaks, and this is Deanna Spingola. I'm coming to you from the sunny suburbs of Chicago. Please visit RBN's website at republicbroadcasting.org. My website is spingola.com, where you may view the guest lineup for this program along with relevant links. During the program, email your questions or comments to Spingola1 at yahoo.com. Join others in the chat room by clicking on the chat room button on my website, Spingola.com, or by going to Spingola.chatango.com. We will take calls in the second hour after we open the phone lines at 800-313-9443. My guest today is Clint Richardson. He is the producer, director, writer, actually he did everything for this wonderful, wonderful movie, Lethal Injection, The Story of Vaccination, which came out in September 2011. His newest movie is Kaffir School, School Districts and the Lottery, which came out in December of 2011. You may see those at realityblogger.wordpress.com. His websites are, as I mentioned, Reality Blogger with 1G, realityblogger.wordpress.com, clint4p.com, and yes, that website is still viable, even though the elections are over, and thecorporationnation.com. Clint, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. Always good to be here.
Well, it's always a pleasure to have you on the program. Your newest article is really something. We talked yesterday and you said you need to read this, and boy, it was kind of startling, kind of
shocking.
Yes,
well, I believe that I called you and told you about it, and I probably sounded like I had no sleep and like my hair was all a mess and that I was wearing yesterday's clothes. And that's exactly what I was doing, because once I started reading and researching this, it was as if all the pieces and the whole reason for doing what I've been doing with these vaccine, with the vaccine documentary and with the research came into place, and it seemed like everything just fell into place, and suddenly I had the origin of disease right in the palm of my hand.
Yes. Well, this new article, Xenotransplantation, Creating the Zombie Apocalypse. And when we think of apocalypse, some people think of biblical kinds of events. But this is something that's going on right now, and something that we don't need to anticipate or fear for the future, because it's already upon us, and we may, in fact, be very vulnerable. We are, in fact, very vulnerable to the situation that you describe, which is pretty gruesome.
Yeah, it's very frightening. And I was amazed because I asked a few doctors and I have a doctor who lives across the street from me, and I asked some nurses that I know, and not one of them had ever heard of a prion. Very few were actually familiar with xenotransplantation, which is actually quite a common thing. But the fact that no one seems to know what this prion, and that's the main topic of this, what it is really, really frightening, especially when you consider that these folks are diagnosing diseases with all confidence. And yet when, for instance, Alzheimer's is diagnosed, you ask a doctor, they have no idea where Alzheimer's comes from or how it's created, how it's caught. Is it genetic? They have no idea.
Right. All righty, we're going to a break. We will be right back after a word from our sponsors. Richardson, and okay, so tell us what this is, and the prion, and you were talking about the doctor that you talked to, several nurses, and yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, well, we're what we're talking about is something that everybody is actually familiar with, or at least its components, its symptoms, everybody is familiar with. Now, whether you're talking about, well, what we're really talking about is dementia. When we look at the word dementia, we find that dementia is just sort of a cover-all explanation for a whole bunch of different types of what we refer to as diseases, when in fact they're all what are called prion diseases, or, well, I won't say all, but it appears that the origins of most disease is actually going to be traced back to what is called a prion. A prion is actually a protein. It does not have DNA. It is not a nucleus, and yet it does not have a nucleus, I should say, and yet it is infectious. Okay, when you receive, for instance, a vaccine, what is happening when they grow these vaccines is that they're growing them on monkey tissue, rhesus monkey tissue, human aborted fetal tissue, all of these different types of cell substrates that they're growing vaccines on. And so we find bovine, or what we'd like to call mad cow, pieces as well that are actually listed as ingredients in the vaccine. It's not just that they grow these things in the vaccines. They actually cannot filter out the proteins and DNA structure of, say, aborted fetal tissues that they clone in order to grow more vaccine. Likewise, they cannot filter out these microscopic proteins called prions. So, like I said, as I was looking into this, and a friend gave me a book, and that's really what started this, called Deadly Feasts. I hear the music.
Well, it shouldn't be playing. That's just a little background music.
Oh, well, I'm suddenly in the mood. So this book, basically the book goes into a called Deadly Feasts, and it goes into, it's in my article, if anyone chooses to get deep into this and discover that your parents and your possibly your children who are getting this early onset type of Alzheimer's disease, it's actually, well, before we go into that, let me just say that when we say the word Alzheimer's disease, or we say the word AIDS, acquired immune deficiency syndrome, or when we say the word Parkinson's, or when we say the words ALS, Lou Gehrig's disease, we could go on down a list of hundreds and hundreds of neurological disorders, diseases, whatever you want to call them. But I think it's important to note here, again, as I said, that when a doctor or when someone is declared to have Alzheimer's or diagnosed, Alzheimer's is not a disease, but is in fact listed as a description of symptoms. The disease is still as officially unknown. In other words, doctors won't be able to tell you how your grandmother or grandfather, or now your child with early onset Alzheimer's, actually acquires Alzheimer's. What I've found out is that these are all different forms of what is called the prion disease. So if I were to take Alzheimer's and I were to take Parkinson's and I were to take ALS, Lou Gehrig's disease, and I were to divide each of those symptoms and make a little marble that represented each symptom, so all of a sudden I have a bag of marbles that represents Parkinson's, and I have a bag of marbles, and the marbles represent symptoms, and that represents Alzheimer's, and this bag of marbles over here represents whatever other degenerative disease of the brain, including multiple sclerosis, HIV, AIDS, all of these things. Again, they're not diseases in and of themselves. They are simply descriptions of bundled symptoms. For instance, when a nurse, a friend of mine is a nurse that works in a works in home health and in hospice. Hospice being, you know your patient is going to die, you don't have any qualms about it, and you're treating death. You're treating someone who's basically wasting away. That is what healthcare has become. And the reason for that, the reason that people go on hospice, the reason Alzheimer's is diagnosed as always terminal, the reason that Parkinson's and all of these other diseases are always fatal, is because prions are inescapably indestructible. They can be radiated. Because remember, they're not life forms as we know them. They're just simply proteins. They can be radiated. They can be cooked at over 1,000 degrees temperature. They can be washed. They can be sterilized. And they will survive because there is no life to kill. These little prions are what are causing what is called, in cattle, it's called bovine spongiform encephalitis. Well, the spongiform represents the holes in the brain that, like a sponge, that this mad cow disease is creating. Well, when we actually do autopsies on Alzheimer's patients, we find the same exact spongiform encephalitis. We find holes in the brain, and that is what prions do. So as these prions are literally eating the darker matter in the brain, they're leaving these holes, and that is what is basically destroying the function of the brain. So you might have the actual elements of multiple sclerosis. You might have paralyzation of your limbs, but that's all stemming from these prions attacking the brain. The brain is what controls those limbs, which controls your motor functions. So what I'm trying to say here is that each of these little diseases that doctors will admit they do not know where they come from, they can only diagnose them as a description of the same disease, basically, with different symptoms. Some nurses call Alzheimer's patients, they have four or five different names they call them, and they tell each other this before they go in the room. They say, well, he's a wanderer, so you have to watch him, because he honestly... because he has prion disease, the part of his brain that tells him to stay put because he's sick is gone. It's unrecognizable. He's literally a zombie walking around not knowing what the heck's going on. Then you have kickers. You have hitters. And more importantly, you have biters. Talk about the zombie approach. You know, the zombie thing is more of a, you know, just an analytical, almost a joke, but not really when you have people who are biting each other because these prions are literally attacking the brain and turning people into unrecognizable automatons. So what I'm just simply trying to tell people is that we have a whole history and series of new degenerative diseases that we've not been able to cure, we've not been able to treat, except to prolong the inevitable, which is always, by the way, death. There is no getting around that. The end result of this, of your brain being eaten by these and I say eaten lightly because it's literally folded proteins that are actually turning other proteins into the same types of folded proteins. Therefore, we call them infectious, even though it's not a life form. It's a very hard to understand thing. But once you look at the evidence that's compiled, you see that Yale University and other universities are actually testing these. They're actually finally looking into them, but they're not making this public. And the reason for that, as Howard Lyman will tell you, Howard Lyman being the crazy cowboy, the guy who used to be a cattle rancher and then now tours the country telling everybody not to eat beef because bovine spongiform encephalitis turns out is transferable to every species. You have sheep who get scrappy. Scrappy is the same thing. It's a prion disease, degenerative disease of the brain. You have also this thing called wasting disease that happens in, I believe, sheep or goats. And that is, I mean, we have, when we talk about AIDS, when you look at human growth hormone for AIDS patients, Serostim is a very popular brand of, I believe, synthetic human growth hormone that is specifically for a human waste disease, human wasting disease. Again, a description of something that is happening in the body, but nobody knows, or at least the professionals out there do not know what's going on. So what I've uncovered is not something new. It is not something that is, you know, this breakthrough of information, but what it is not talked about, because truly, if this information were to become, you know, public, I apologize. One second. I was watching him, my thing crashed, and then it just came back. Sorry. It's not public information. It indicts. It indicts. Here I go again. It indicts the not only the meatpacking and meat industry, but also the pharmaceutical, medical, and agencies such as the FDA, the CDC. This is the problem, because this is so huge that it would literally stifle the entire structure that supposedly protects us.
Amazing. All right, this really is the music where we go to the break. We'll be right back in 3 minutes. All righty, we are back. Our guest today is Clint Richardson. His websites are realityblogger.wordpress.com. and thecorporationnation.com and clint4p.com. All right, please continue from where you left off.
Well, you know, this is such a vast subject, and really I just sort of happened onto it perhaps a month ago when someone gave me this book called Deadly Feasts. And the book starts out with a disease named Kuru, which was discovered in New Guinea. New Guinea was sort of known by most of the early sailors that Papua New Guinea...
didn't want to go there.
It was avoided. Yeah, there was all kinds of rumors of cannibalism and all this stuff going on there. And so even Captain Bly of that famous story that I can't think of the name of, avoided the island because of the cannibalism rumors. And so, as it turns out, this Kuru disease was basically caused from the women of the tribe eating quite voraciously the remains of the dead tribesmen. And they had a very unique situation with the way that the women and the men interacted, and marriage was not in any way for love or anything like that. But what you had is women actually thought that the men were doing sorcery on them, because they were, you know, in the 30s sometime, the elders decided that they had a great supply of meat that was just going to waste with all these dead people. And so they started eating them. And, of course, they developed what is called this Kuru, K-U-R-U, and it basically, when you read the description of what Kuru actually is, the first thing that you think is well, zombie, because you're basically talking about twitchy behavior. In other words, uncontrollable movements, very similar to Parkinson's disease. You lose the function of recognition of your husband, your wife, your you know, you start forgetting things. Your mind just doesn't work quite the same. That is the human version of that, and that is why cannibalism, that's why they actually stopped them from eating people. They had to explain that they were getting this Kuru disease from the people. But see, we have something that's equally as bad when we talk about what's called Creutzfeldt-Jakob's disease, which is one of the least talked about diseases out there. It's called CJD is what it's referred to. Which is essentially caused from what I call xenotransplantation. When I say xenotransplantation, there's allotransplantation and there's xenotransplantation. Allotransplantation is when you take a particular part of the human body and transfer it to another human body. It has never touched animal, an animal origin, so it's never mixed and had the possibility of getting contaminated with animal prions, animal proteins. That is allotransplantation. What xenotransplantation is the next big thing. It's been going on for some time. Where you say, I have a friend. I asked, and he said, yeah, I have. He has a pig vein in one of his arms because they didn't have human veins available. They used a pig vein in order to to connect the veins to save his life, which is perfectly an understandable proposition, unless you consider that these animal proteins that come along with that, well, they have an incubation life of up to at least 50 years. So they can be in your body, these prions, as dormant protein structures, just floating around, and then suddenly wake up, whether it be from some environmental cause, some outside cause, whether it be from light. A certain kind of ultraviolet light seems to do the trick. But for some reason, they become active. And they become active on a scale. They usually become active in an age bracket that we see with Alzheimer's patients. In other words, as you get older, your immune system starts going down. You've constantly been building up heavy metals from all the, for lack of a better word, crap that we're putting into our bodies. Something is stimulating them to awaken from their dormant state, and they start literally making holes in the brain. Now, again, the reason I'm clumping this all together into xenotransplantation is because literally vaccines are a humongous business right now, very profitable, and we have a case where we're, again, putting bovine proteins, including prions, into vaccines. We're putting, everything from Lyme disease to salmonella to monkey, sheep, everything you could possibly want, including human DNA and protein structures, into vaccines, because we're growing the vaccines on these cells and then injecting them right into our bodies.
Oh, on that happy thought, we're going to go to a break. Welcome back. Our guest today is Clint Richardson, and he's talking about this it's very interesting. The whole article is just amazing. And the way that they can things from animals, whether you're talking about veins or just aborted fetal tissue or some of the other gross things that they can inject into our body that we're not even aware of. And it even, we could drink a Coke. I wouldn't drink a Coke, but you could drink a Coke and be drinking something that is going to affect you, not immediately, but maybe years later.
Right. And this is the real point of this whole thing, is without our knowing it, without the people actually understanding what is happening when they do take a vaccine, understanding what they're doing when they're eating certain products. It's basically, I'm calling it cannibalism as medicine. Without really understanding it, we are in a constant way consuming not only animals and animal products, proteins and fluids. Even if you're a vegetarian, of course, they make gelatin capsules out of collagen, which is basically a mishmash of animal product, bone meal. We use bone meal for plants. I mean, we are basically using animal products for almost everything we do. When you're applying cosmetics to your face, you may be using aborted fetal tissue from humans. I mean, this is the thing that unwittingly we've all become just sort of thrown into it in this century, and we don't even know it's happening. And so literally, we are a species that consumes itself for medicinal purposes. Okay, I mean, I went and saw this movie called Cloud Atlas. Don't see many movies, but that one looked interesting. So I'm watching it, and at the end, sorry to give away a spoiler, turn the radio off for a minute if you don't want to hear, but they reveal that the people are eating themselves. The people are literally eating themselves. I mean, that is the big story. That is the big cliffhanger at the end of the movie, and that is what these people are trying to stop. So we're this is a truth that is being portrayed as science fiction in a movie, you see, and that's what I find happens all the time. So let me give you, just so we understand what this is, and please understand that vaccination is not necessarily in the category of xenotransplantation. A xenotransplantation, for instance, could be taking a pig heart and putting it into a human body as a heart transplant. That is xenotransplantation. The FDA explains it as any procedure that involves the transplantation, implantation, or infusion into a human recipient of either live cells, tissues, or organs from non-human animal sources, or human body fluids, cells, tissues, or organs that have had ex vivo contact, in other words, outside contact, or infused contact with live non-human animal cells, tissues, or organs. And this is why I'm including vaccines in this sort of group, because literally you've not only got the aborted fetal tissue of humans, but you're growing that tissue and you're using that tissue alongside animal proteins and tissues. And this is what we're pumping into our bodies. Unknowingly, it sounds like to me, spreading these prions, these dormant proteins that are infectious, that might sit around for up to 50 years, possibly more, and then waking up and slowly degrade your brain. Generally, they say 3 months to 2 years is the life cycle of someone who has an infection of a prion disease.
Now, the problem... Could these also just attack your DNA immediately? Couldn't they get into your mitochondria and start affecting your overall health if your immune system is degraded?
Well, that's the problem, really, is that it's unknown. It's an unknown. In fact, you can't even diagnose. Like, if a, say, an Alzheimer's patient is diagnosed with Alzheimer's and they die, the only way that you'll ever know that they have a prion disease or infected prions is when you do an autopsy and see that they have holes or sponge-like, spongiform encephalopathy in their brain. You cannot diagnose prions unless you're taking a spinal tap or you're dissecting the brain. So there is no, of course doctors, you know, are saying it's just some random degenerative disease possibly passed on. Well, guess what? There's a few forms of prion disease. One of those is passing it on from mother to child. Okay, so, you know, when we think of, I was having this conversation with a nurse, and he, it was his idea, actually. He said, you know, that would make sense because of these things are dormant for different times, why Alzheimer's seems to skip generations. They say it's a genetic trait, and yet it skips generations, possibly because those prions never actually wake up or never actually start being active and start eating the brain, or they wake up so late or the person dies early. So we have a case where we're saying it's, oh, it's degenerative. You know, it's so easy to say that something is passed on from your mother, whereas this is a very, very obvious way of explaining all of these degenerative diseases. And the problem that I really, really got me, because, again, I'm a cancer survivor, if you want to call it that. My view on cancer is quite different than most people. But, yeah, I had cancer when I was 17, actually. Sarcoma in the mouth. And my my brother's youngest son died of the same cancer, but it was in the brain. So I was curious because in the movie, you know, in Lethal Injection, I was very clear that vaccines have been proven to pass on cancers. But this makes it quite different, because what we're passing on is actually the prion precursor for cancer. What I wanted to do is just give you just a few examples of this. There's a section that I wrote in here called Prions and Cancer, where I just quote some of the top sources. Science Daily reported that prion protein was identified as novel early pancreatic cancer biomarker. It goes on to say that mad cow disease is caused by the accumulation of abnormal protein, the prion, in the brain of an affected patient. And then it says, outside of the brain, very little is known about prions. Well, it turns out that these things are literally precursors for cancer. There's another story called Prions and Cancer, A Story Unfolding, which is a play on words for the way prions fold and then cause other prions to fold in on themselves, becoming infected, and these holes appear, this fungiform. It says the ever-growing crowd of misfolded proteins form the aggregates seen in diseases such as Parkinson's and Alzheimer's. P53, which prion, protein 53, is a protein with a daunting task of suppressing tumor formation in the body, and may show a typical prion-like behavior when mutated. It has been known for some time that the buildup of P53 in the cell impairs the protein in preventing tumor growth. This has been observed in neuroblastoma, retinoblastoma, breast, and colon cancer. So, you know, as we go on, we see that at least 50% of the cancers are prion-related. In other words, the reason cancers are growing is because these prions are getting in there and affecting the very protein structure that actually lets you not obtain the cancer in the first place. There's another article that says the good news about prions. It says last month's discovery of the mad cow disease in the U.S. food supply has elevated prions from an obscure biological curiosity to topic A on the talk shows. And then, of course, it just disappeared and no one really talks about this. So it also says prions and their cousin proteins may prove to be benign, even helpful in normal mental functions like memory. An understanding of why prions go bad could lead to treatments for diseases as common as cancer and diabetes. So you see what I'm trying to get across here is that everything from the description of AIDS, from the description of cancer, again, cancer just means the growth of abnormal cells. It is a description of many, many forms of what we call cancer. But if everything is stemming from these prions, or I should say these infectious prions, and we're injecting them and we're eating them. I mean, anybody who's taken a cursory look at the cattle industry knows that, for one, it's not clean. We know that we're feeding animals bone meal to cows. We're literally setting up a world stage for an epidemic that, I mean, if this thing mutates in a different way, we really are looking at what I would call a zombie apocalypse. I mean, it sounds funny, but it really is. If you read the symptoms, well, let's do that. Let's read what the FDA actually describes as what's called Creutzfeldt-Jakob's disease. Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease, actually. Dr. Gadzizek pointed out that physicians often misdiagnosed CJD, Creutzfeldt-Jakob's disease, as Alzheimer's disease, as the form of cerebral atrophy known as Pick's disease, or as many other conditions, including brain tumors and strokes. People are having strokes out there, and doctors are saying it's from cholesterol or it's from whatever, when the whole time it's misdiagnosed. It's a misdiagnosed form of this prion disease. It's like one disease that has been cut up into little descriptions of the symptoms, when all the time we're dealing with one problem, which is prions. This unalive, it is not a living thing, and yet it is infectious. And this is... they recommended treating all organs as infectious, even those fixed in formaldehyde. They only found one chemical, chlorine bleach, that reliably killed the scrappy agent, which is another form of prion disease. Okay, so that includes sheep then in this particular set of descriptions, because scrappy is pretty much the same as BSE, bovine spongiform encephalitis. It's really crazy. When we're looking at Creutzfeldt-Jakob's disease, what we have is this very obscure, unknown disease that the CDC the Mayo Clinic says is only about 1 in 1 million people. So let me just read you. Right. Unless you consider, well, wait a minute, what if Alzheimer's is actually Creutzfeldt-Jakob's disease? What if Parkinson's is Creutzfeldt-Jakob's disease? What if cancer is a variation or variant Creutzfeldt-Jakob's disease? We'll call it CJD so I don't keep butchering the name,
right.
CJD disease is a degenerative brain disorder that leads to dementia and ultimately death. Ultimately death, meaning 100% death. Symptoms of Creutzfeldt-Jakob's disease, CJD, sometimes resemble those of other dementia-like brain disorders, such as Alzheimer's, but CJD usually progresses much more rapidly. It captured public attention in the 1990s when some people in the United Kingdom developed a form of the disease, which is called variant CJD, VCJD, after eating meat from diseased cattle. However, classic CJD has not been linked to contaminated beef. Of course, they're not going to link it to contaminated beef because the amount of cattle you'd have to destroy. You basically, in order to guarantee that CJV does not transfer, does not contaminate the whole human population, you'd have to stop eating beef, you'd have to stop using animal products in the profitable vaccine industry, in the profitable anti-blood clotting, anything that you inject, including human growth hormone, you would have to literally shut down the entire most profitable industry in the world, which is the medical pharmaceutical industry. You would literally have to stop all of these drugs that they're creating by growing them in animal substrates or human substrates, human aborted fetal tissue.
Right. Now, I was talking to a mutual friend of ours last night, and he mentioned the Oprah Winfrey program back in the early 90s, I believe. I don't watch her, so I have no idea.
Where she was sued?
Yes, and she said that she had somebody on talking about this situation, and so she recommended that we all stop eating beef, and she was going to do the same. And they did sue her, and the lawsuit went on for like a period of 6 years. And then it all went away. You know, she dropped that issue, and... we really haven't heard a lot about it since.
Yeah, and, you know, from what I understand, it basically financially ruined Oprah Winfrey. And I'm sure that at some point she had to make a decision. She either had a career and was going to make billions and millions, billions of dollars, or she could tell the truth. And I think we know what the decision was.
Right.
You know? So, and I think that happens more than any of us can possibly know with these people who are quote unquote famous. So, you know, I believe that was the crazy cowboy actually that was part of that.
Who
she was from. Yeah, yeah. But let me, here's the symptoms of Khrushchev-Jacobs disease. And as I'm reading these, keep in mind Alzheimer's, keep in mind these degenerative dementia diseases.
Okay, we'll have you do that when we come back from the break. Be right back. All righty, welcome back. Our guest today is Clint Richardson, and you were going to give us some information here, a list.
Yes.
Is that what you were going to do?
Symptoms.
Yes.
The symptoms of Khrushchev-Jacobs disease, which completely overlap and are exactly the same, although often less rapid. In other words, it takes longer for some people to fully realize the result of Alzheimer's, which is death from some symptom. Khrushchev-Jacobs disease is marked by rapid mental deterioration, usually within a few months. Initial signs and symptoms of CJD typically include, and by the way, this is from the Mayo Clinic, it is not just some conspiracy website. CJD symptoms typically include personality changes, anxiety, depression, memory loss, impaired thinking, blurred vision, insomnia, difficulty speaking, difficulty swallowing, and sudden jerky movements. As the disease progresses, mental symptoms worsen. Most people eventually lapse into a coma. Heart failure, respiratory failure, pneumonia, or other infections are generally the cause of death. The disease usually runs its course in about 7 months, although a few people may live up to 1 or 2 years after diagnosis. In people with the rarer variant form of CJD, psychiatric symptoms may be more prominent in the beginning, with dementia, the loss of the ability to think, reason, and remember. So, you know, two things come to mind. One is Alzheimer's patients, Parkinson's patients, you know, all kinds of dementia-related diseases. And, of course, the other thing that comes to mind when we consider sudden jerky movements, personality changes, anxiety, insomnia, difficulty speaking, difficulty swallowing. Well, what does that remind you of in the Hollywood version of zombie genres, right?
Right.
I mean, you know, don't go there, but think about what that, you know, those symptoms describe not only Alzheimer's patients, but also zombies. I mean, I hate to say it, and we certainly seem to be being prepared when the CDC is putting, you know, how to survive a zombie Holocaust, when they're promoting that we should just kill people who have this, when they're promoting, you know, blowing heads off of zombies. I can't help but think there is plans in the future, either to purposefully or there's an expected, you know, natural or accidental cause of this going viral, this going, you know, maybe they're touching it up in their labs, making it
sure.
Technology. You know, the possibilities for this are endless. And as I've proved many times, especially in that documentary, okay, the 1917 or 1918 Spanish flu was dug up and reconstituted in the government weapons labs. In Fort Dix, I believe it was. And I've got the guy who did it for the government saying as much. They recreated the 1918 Spanish flu, and then a couple of years later released it, and then we had the swine flu of 2008, 2009.
Right. All righty. We do need to go to our 60-second top of the hour break. We will be right back after station ID. Welcome back. Spingola Speaks. This is Deanna Spingola. Our guest today is Clint Richardson. He is the producer-director of Lethal Injection, The Story of Vaccination. Came out in September of 2011. Also, he produced Kaffir School, School Districts, and The Lottery in December of 2011. We are currently talking about his latest article, which is it's just a very, very interesting article. And it is entitled Xenotransplantation, Creating the Zombie Apocalypse. And somebody in the chat room asked me a question, asked me to ask you a question. And I took the liberty of answering the question.
Is the question, am I a nutball?
No, I'll just run it by you. Okay. Ask Clint if he thinks that the rabies virus is in the vaccines that make people attack others. And I said, I think that the media is behind the incidents of people who attack and cannibalize others. The mainstream media would not be publicizing such incidents if they were not beneficial to the elite. Nor would Hollywood have created Hannibal Lecter or The Night of the Living Dead.
Yeah, I mean, you got to think about this. You know, there's several. Admittingly, I am a sort of a zombie genre fan. I worked on Resident Evil, the series of video games, and you know, it's just I grew up with it basically, so I'm not immune to its charming effects. The basic worship of death, of necrotism. So I can't help it. I like it. I and that is what's happened to people like me. I still like zombie movies. I can't stop it. You know, so it there is something about it that literally it's maybe it's because there is some form of truth to it. Maybe not the waking up from being dead part of it, but. Several zombie movies, in answer to this question, especially 28 Days Later, have they weren't The Walking Dead, but instead they were infected by rabies, and it started in a lab where they were experimenting with rabies on monkeys, and the monkey got out, bit someone, and immediately transferred the rabies to the person, and then they bit the next person, and they bit the next person. Now, do I think that's a possibility? I don't think so. I think we have to sort of reel back from the Hollywood version and say, well, a monkey could bite someone and transfer if they had blood in the mouth and the blood got mixed. But let's not even go there. Let's just talk about what we're talking about, which is who the heck knows what's happening. And just to clarify something here as well, the risk, this is still from the Mayo Clinic. It says the risk of CJD or variant CJD from the following. And when they say variant, they mean mutated. This is very much like a swine or a flu virus. It's not a virus. It's not a retrovirus. Again, it's a protein. It's not a living thing, but it does mutate. It does become variant CJD. Variant proteins from the following sources is estimated to be extremely low, but they're going to list it anyway because I'm assuming because they've found that it has a connection. The risk of this from vaccines. It says that on this Mayo Clinic document, it says some parts of cows, including blood, enzymes, and amino acids, are used to grow the bacteria and viruses needed to make certain vaccines. Not all vaccines are grown in cattle parts, however, and the Food and Drug Administration, the FDA, recommends that companies producing such vaccine use cattle parts only from low-risk countries. These recommendations apply to cosmetics as well. You're applying it to your skin. It sinks
Yikes.
In.
Okay. With that, we'll go to a break. We'll be right back. All righty, welcome back. This is Deanna, and we need a clarification. Someone in the chat room said, so is Clint saying that it's possible for rabies to be in vaccines to make people crazy? I don't believe you said that, did you?
No, rabies... I don't honestly have anything to say about rabies. I haven't looked at it, so I would hate to say something that's incorrect or not sourced. But is it possible that rabies could be in some form of rabies? You know, I would probably direct people to Dr. A. Truott and his research on what he calls zombie. I can't remember what he called them, but there were four specific bioweapons that they created that were called Zombie 1 through 4 and 1 through 5. And I wouldn't want to go into rabies without researching it more, honestly, but I find it I find the concept of that more realistic as far as what how do I say it? I find that type of symptom, because most zombie genre stuff is you know, The Walking Dead. You have to die and come back to life, and you're, you know, completely screwed at that point. But the concept of spreading a rabies-like disease is much more viable in the concept of the government doing it, or the government, you know, weapons labs or whoever, the terrorists, actually creating a form of it that can be spread easily. Okay, so I'll say that. But what I'm talking about here, I'm actually trying to get you to forget all that and concentrate on what is probably most likely already in 100% of the population, which are these dormant prions. And the reason I say that is because there's certain ways that this can be transmitted. And those ways are all the ways that you would think. excuse me. Here's the three ways that the Mayo Clinic lists as transmittable CJD or prion disease, basically. Sporadically, meaning they develop the disease for no apparent reason. Well, that's exactly what people or doctors say about Alzheimer's. We don't know why your mother has Alzheimer's. We don't know why your child has early onset Alzheimer's disease. It's spontaneous. It's sporadic. We don't know. Okay, that's one of the causes. That simply means that the prions are waking up, and they are literally starting to eat these microscopic holes in the brain. These don't really show up on. That's why I say you can't diagnose it until death, because you have to do an autopsy and examine the brain tissue with a microscope in order to find this spongiform state of the brain, the encephalopathy. So by inheritance is the other way it lists. In the United States, about 5 to 10% of people with CJD have a family history of the disease or test positive for a genetic mutation associated with CJD. This type is referred to as familial CJD. What this means is that when you are born, if your mother has eaten beef, if your mother has gotten a vaccine, if your mother has in any way had any sort of xenotransplantation, meaning some animal thing or fluid or body part that is protein, DNA, that has somehow gotten into them. And this, keep in mind, this can be as simple as breathing in the bone meal that you use to plant your flowers, because it's basically ground up downer cattle. And when I say downer cattle, that means cattle that died or were killed because they started showing signs of bovine spongiform encephalopathy or mad cow disease. Okay, the medical term for mad cow disease is BSE. Okay, the other listed way of contracting prions or prion disease, a CJD, is by contamination. And we've already discussed that. After being exposed to infected human tissue during a medical procedure, such as a cornea, an eye transplant, or a skin transplant. Standard sterilization methods do not destroy abnormal prions. A few people have developed CJD after undergoing brain surgery with contaminated instruments. This means that all of the instruments in hospitals, there is no way to remove the instance of infected prions off of those medical instruments. You can't wash them off. Well, I won't say that. But you can't. You can't heat them off. You can't, without burning the metal, you can't irradiate them. You can't put them in formaldehyde. You can't do anything to these things because nothing kills them. They are not alive in the first place. That's very important to understand. This is called iatrogenic CJD, which basically means you're getting it, you're getting the prions accidentally through a medical procedure, basically. Variant CJD is linked primarily to eating beef infected with bovine spongiform encephalopathy, or BSE. In other words, mad cow disease. So, you know, people who've received human growth hormone derived from human pituitary glands or who've had dura mater grafts may be at risk of iatrogenic CJD. The risk of contracting variant CJD from eating contaminated beef is difficult to determine. We're basically talking about an unknown, undetectable thing here. And again, you can only really find it in death. Death is literally the sweet release from this disease. It's the only way to stop it.
Right.
You got doctors.
We have some callers lining up here. Do you want to take a caller?
Sure.
All right. Let's take Joel in Indiana.
Hi, Deanna. This is Joe from Indiana.
Hi.
Hi, and what a pleasure to talk to Clint. Clint, you are phenomenal. I wish I had you as my professors when I was in medical school. You're amazing. But what you're talking about is extremely explosive. I did some graduate work at UCLA in MS, and what you're talking about, the prions, makes a lot of sense. I didn't catch the whole show. And you're saying that prions are non-living, but is it a protein, though?
Yes, it is a protein.
Oh, Clint?
Yes, it's absolutely a protein, and it is a mutated protein, and it has an incubation period of anywhere from 0 to 50 years at least.
Did we lose Joe? Oh.
Well, let me just say, you know, I'm not here to scare people. I don't take my being here talking about this or writing this information and presenting it. I am not trying to scare people. What I really want to do, because I think this is the most important thing that I will ever uncover, because it literally, in my belief, in my experience of all the research I've done into this, I believe that this very well might be the origin of most modern neurological, degenerative disease, including cancers, HIV, Gofor syndrome, whatever you want to call these things. So I'm not here to scare people. I'm not here to scare people. I'm here to rally people, because the FDA, the CDC, the cattle industry, the medical industry, the pharmaceutical industry are all in on this. They're in on the cover-up. They're in. This is what I want to do, because right now the only way that we are going to live rich, enjoyable lives is to focus on the one thing that is creating all of this disease. And if we, the people, I hate saying that, but we, the people, do not do something, create some kind of organization, do something. I mean, right now it's illegal, for instance, to use Royal Rife's technology to treat cancer, to treat disease.
Joe is back.
Hi, I'm sorry. It must be my phone is acting up.
Okay.
Okay, Clint?
Clint, you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Is Clint there?
I am
okay.
Certainly here.
Joe and Clint are both there. Talk to each other.
Okay. I just wanted to say Clint is onto something really, really significant. From my education, from the research that I was involved in, I was back at UCLA with MS, they always thought it was a virion or a viral nature to MS. It's also been explored that possibly autoimmune, but what Clint is saying about these prions, and I missed the first part of the show. I don't know if he is saying that a prion is a protein, because a protein has genetic material, and if that's the case, that would explain the autoimmune nature of, if it is autoimmune, of MS and all these neurologic disorders, you know, that are occurring. Can you help comment on that?
Well, yeah, first of all, you can go to my blog. It is the top story there. It is called Xenotransplantation Creating the Zombie Apocalypse. Don't dismiss it because of the name. That'll be explained. But let me just read you the definition of prion. It's any of various infectious proteins that are abnormal forms of normal cellular proteins that proliferate by inducing the normal protein to convert to the abnormal form. Sounds like cancer, doesn't it? And that in mammals, including humans, include pathogenic forms which arise sporadically as a result of genetic mutation or by transmission, as by ingestion of infected tissue, and which upon accumulation in the brain cause a prion disease. A prion disease basically being encephalopathy, spongiform.
Okay, gentlemen, we do have to go to a break. We'll be right back and we'll pick this up on the other side. Welcome back. Our guest today is Clint Richardson, and we are talking about a very, very interesting topic today. Let's see. We have a cattle rancher on the phone. Let's take Werner in New Brunswick.
Good afternoon, Dan, and good afternoon, Clint.
Hello.
I'm not a rancher. I'm just a little beef farmer, whatever left is there.
Okay.
Early in the program, Clint mentioned about New Guinea and the headhunter tribes. This was about 10 years ago. I was listening one night to Coast, and they had a scientist on, and he was talking about that during the Second World War, when Southeast Asia was occupied by Japanese forces, there was a Japanese research team, and they wanted to develop Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease, or whatever you call it, you know, the prion disease. They wanted to develop it as a bioweapon. So they deliberately infected people with that disease. And then by the end of the Second World War, most of the military technology was being picked up by the Allied forces. And I understand the British, they had occupied during the Second World War, they were in Southeast Asia. And I wonder if they did not pick up on the research of this scientist, Japanese scientist. And
very possible.
And visit there on the British Isles. And it was about 20 years ago, I read that one of the islands of the British Isles, that's where the British military, they were experimenting with anthrax. You know, another bioweapon.
Sure,
and,
sure.
It contaminated the soil on that island to that extent that it was off limit for anybody. And where were the first known outbreaks of mad cow disease? They were on the British Isles, in the United Kingdom.
Right. Now, are you talking about like Units 731, where they actually didn't prosecute those scientists?
I don't know about that. But as I say, and then people, they started importing some of the British cattle breeds here over to North America. And
that's a very interesting theory.
Cows to cows. Here in Canada, 80%.
Okay, Werner, let Clint respond.
Well, it's a very interesting theory because, I mean, if you think about it, it's a really great way to introduce a variant form of...
Well,
a prion disease by introducing it into the feed, the cattle, the our food, you know. You infect the cattle, you infect the people. And you have McDonald's and Burger King and Wendy's all there, you know, giving you hamburgers with 100 pieces of 100 different cow in it. And also, you know, you said something about the soil. Let me just read this to you. The London Daily Telegraph on April 4th, 1996, said the following. It was a warning to the people. It said, gardeners have been reminded by the Royal Horticultural Society to wear gloves and a dust-excluding mask to avoid any risk of BSE, bovine spongiform encephalopathy when applying a spring dressing of blood and bone meal to roses and shrubs. So you're going to be out there doing the most, what you believe is the most innocent thing by spreading what you buy in the store, probably a Monsanto product, on as something to grow your plants. Meanwhile, you're breathing in the dust, the microscopic particles that may very well be prions from the cattle that they use, which are the contaminated BSE cattle. That's why they're warning people of this. Demand for beef is recovering steadily. At London's Smithfield Wholesale Market, the trade in better quality cuts of British beef has recovered from zero a week ago to just under half the normal. So keep in mind that if you look at the Red Cross website or blood donation websites, if you lived or even visited in the United Kingdom from 1980 to sometime in the 1990s, about 15 or 20 years, you cannot donate blood because you may very well have eaten cows with BSE, which would then be transferable or transmissible encephalitis, spongiform encephalitis. So, in other words, the CDC and the FDA has at least admitted that we cannot use blood from infected people who may very well already have these prions in them, this BSE.
Okay, thank you. All right, Vern, did you have another comment? We have a whole bunch of callers.
Another comment in that regard, what I say about in Canada, 80% of all the beef production is being done now in big commercial feedlots run by two big multinational corporations. And their vertical integration, where they've been using the slaughterhouse waste and using it for feeding it back to cattle. Like here in Eastern Canada, most of us beef farmers, we raise the animals about as organic as we can. In the summer, they eat, they're on pasture, and in the winter, they eat hay, and no other monkey business going on. But we were being blamed, you know, blanketly being blamed. But
sure.
Another aspect about the mutation of the protein, the increased exposure to microwave radiation. People, you know, people that have Alzheimer's, what they found out, they have high levels of aluminum in their brain
wow.
tissue. And
okay, we do have to go to a break. We'll be right back, gentlemen. Richardson. His website is realityblogger.wordpress.com. Again, is realityblogger with one G .wordpress.com. Werner, are you still with us?
I'm still there, but as I say, it is such a complex subject, and it is hard to do it justice in just a couple hours.
Right, sure is. But do read this article. Do you want to complete your thought? Because we do need to run on here.
That passed away of Alzheimer's, said extreme high levels of aluminum in their remaining brain tissue. And what the point I want to make with the increased exposure to microwave radiation. What happens when you put an aluminum dish into a microwave oven?
I don't think you're supposed to.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't use one.
Yeah, sparks fly. But when there is an increased level of aluminum in the brain, What are the consequences when we are exposed to all this radiation?
Sure.
Yeah, and you know, that's what they call these.
It might look like it is a spongiform encephalopathy.
Okay, let Clint respond.
Well, what I'm curious about most is because Alzheimer's patients do have high levels of aluminum, and because other patients have high levels of other, I'm actually wondering in my mind if these outside influences, these heavy metals, are actually what is actually creating an environment to wake these things up, to have them mutate even further. That's my best conclusion, is that the reason that we're seeing such a prevalence of it is, as you say, these outside or environmental influences on the way these Freon's work. And as far as what you were saying about the, you know, trying to weaponize, they try to weaponize everything. If you just read about different things, you know, it's there's nothing that can't be weaponized at this point. So what my concern is, again, I'm thinking of a patent for the delivery of certain vaccines to specific places in the body that I have, and I'm curious if they could actually, what really scares me is that they could actually develop these prions in the lab and design them or alter them to where they're only going to attack a certain function or part of the brain. Let's just give an example. Let's say that they're only going to attack what's the part of the brain that they say gives you your empathy, your third eye? You know, what if they develop something that only attacks a certain function of the brain? That makes people. I mean, this is what I'm trying to get to people. And what again, I'm not trying to scare people. What I'm trying to do is get this information out there, because it literally may very well be the origin of all modern degenerative diseases, from cancer to AIDS to all these horrible deaths that people are dying, and the industries that have been built around suffering, around these diseases, cancer, Alzheimer's, they are the most profitable businesses out there. I think we can all agree. One of the things that I put in here was a horrible article from Pfizer. Okay, the headline of the article, it was in the New York Times in 2008. It wasn't posted in the health or the medical section. It was posted in the business section. Pfizer to focus on more profitable diseases. Okay, that is the title of this article in the New York Times. Pfizer company to focus on more profitable diseases. Folks, that title should tell you everything. A drug company that is publicly stating to appease its shareholders or to get more shareholders or to whatever is going to focus on more profitable diseases. Well, when we go down, what do we find? The company would focus its research, according to the chief executive officer, Jeffrey Kindler, the company would focus its research budget on medicines for cancer, pain, Alzheimer's disease, and diabetes. We haven't talked about diabetes, but diabetes is also related to this prion disease. So, I don't know what to tell folks, except that it is time for us to ditch our allegiance and our consent and our support for the government, who then gives billions and billions of taxpayer money to research and development, free money for pharmaceuticals, simply so that they can develop drugs that are for the symptom relief of what this one disease is doing. Yes, they're diagnosed as many, many, many different diseases, but it's all originating from one thing. So how can we expect the government to help us when they're supporting these companies that are interested in making a profit over helping people? Pfizer just told you that it's going to focus on more profitable diseases, not to cure diseases, but to cure the symptoms of those diseases. Folks, it is time for us to collectively say no. We need to focus on this, and this is why I'm bringing this forward. Prion disease is very likely the origin of all modern disease, aside from some of the other environmental diseases that I'm sure we're suffering from, all the radiation and cell phone and everything else. But for the most part, when we talk about mutation, we're talking about we're literally talking about the folding of the protein structure in the body.
Right. Okay. Well, thank you, Werner, for your phone call. We do need to move on because there's quite a lot of callers on hold here.
Let me just commend Werner. First of all, I like Werner. He's called before.
Oh, he's darling.
Yes, he's wonderful. But let me just commend him for doing the organic farming, because that's becoming rare and it's becoming illegal. One of the things, as he was talking, that I thought about, I was wondering when maybe he could research that and get back to me. When the heck did they start pasteurizing milk? That's the question. When did they start radiating beef? Was it to kill prions? I mean, is this more of a conspiracy than we can possibly imagine? Why did they start pasteurizing milk? There was nothing wrong with milk, except when they started treating cows like they were less than animal. I mean, less than human, whatever you want to say. When they started abusing animals and feeding them themselves, maybe that's why they started pasteurizing milk.
Oh, indeed. Is Werner still there? Oh, okay. Okay, let's take Richard in Washington. Richard, welcome to the program. Did Richard drop? Okay, Richard in Washington.
Yeah, good morning. The problem being there's always a little truth to everything, this is a condition of that. I'll address primarily Joe, because he was indoctrinated in the same system I was, University of California. To actually have a disease pattern, and that's the problem, is the actual model. The Rockefeller-inspired AMA disease model is totally fraudulent. But in that model, Koch's law says that you have to have four proofs of any disease. If you follow that line of thinking, you really find out that the prions are a result and not a cause. If you go back to Anton Bouchamp and Louis Pasteur's controversy, you find out the term is called pleomorphism. Essentially, the terrain determines what kind of disease pattern you have. It's all about what you do to your body, what kind of nutrition, etc., you bring into it. With cancer, with all of the disease patterns, you're saying they're nothing more than deficiencies of nutrition. And that's what's being transmitted. The food patterns are being transmitted to the population, and every 20 years or so we're indoctrinated with this fact that we can't be hunters that we're supposed to be. We got to go into this vegetation mode, and that is really study insulin and its effect on the body, and you'll find the correlate to all these problems. And for Werner, cows are supposed to eat grass. You feed them grains, that kills them and creates the problems that we are now describing as a disease pattern. That's short and sweet, so I'll leave it at that.
Okay, thank you so much.
Well, I will say I thought about that as I was reading a lot of this, you know, because a lot of it said, hey, we need to stop eating beef. I have a concern about that, but, you know, I really recommend going through the entire research thing and then even looking further, because I'm starting to find some things that are, you know, above and beyond what I've already put in my little blog entry here. But like I said, there, when you look at cancer and you see that these high level studies have been done that shows that cancers can't exist, or a lot of cancers, not all, without these protein structures, without the N-terminal fragments or amino acids, 24 through 90, was suggested to be an indispensable region for single signal transduction and invasion promoting functions of PRPCs, which are these prion proteins. I think what you're saying with the comment was that prions are a result and not a cause, and you're probably both correct and incorrect. Sure, they are a result of outside influences. We are intaking these proteins, these structures from not only cows but sheep and humans and everything else. Where, like I said, medicine has become cannibalism, whether we like it or not. And so, yeah, it is a cause and effect relationship, but the the prions have to turn or have to unincubate before they can cause the damage. So it's sort of a moot point, because you know, you're saying that they're a result of something else, which is very true, but they're also the cause of the final what I'm starting to say is zombification of people, the eating of brains, the digging holes and tunnels through the brain. It's sort of a, as I understood your comment, it's a bit of a catch 22, because you can't have something without it being created in the first place.
All righty, let's take Leslie in Alberta.
Hello?
Yes, Leslie. Leslie, oh, welcome to the program.
Thanks. The previous caller that said partial truths, kind of in agreement with that. I think your guest is a bit of a latecomer in this issue. If no one brings up the research, the epidemiological research of Mark Purdy, wherein he summarized this in his book, posthumously described as Animal Farm, P-H-A-R-M, Animal Farm. And his work has also been listed on a website called PurdyEnvironment.com. I think people have to look at that data to understand what really BSC is all about. I'm not into commercial farming. I don't promote industrialization of our food supply. And I believe that there are problems with pharmaceuticals, absolutely. And I don't promote the idea of vaccination. But what Mark Purdy discovered by going around the world, examining all these areas where the disease did occur, is that they are definitely environmentally connected. And Werner had a little part truth there about aluminum. Dr. Boonseng Wong, some 30 years ago, had determined that that Alzheimer's patients had distorted metal contamination in their brains when they did autopsies on them, which was a relationship of a half of the copper and 10 times the manganese in the brain. So we're seeing diseases that are similar in different species, but are not necessarily proven to be, infectious or can be got from consuming the feed. Mark, CJD was the Boonseng Wong's issue that he'd studied. Back at the time, Mr. Purdy was a rancher or a dairy farmer in Britain when the outbreak occurred, and his research highlights the fact that hundreds of thousands of tons of meat and bone meal were shipped to the Saudi Arabian countries where they were feeding this material, and not one case of the disease came up. So when we looked at that huge outflux in Britain of the disease at that time, there's other issues which bring up nerve agents that were used to kill the warble fly and so on. And these nerve agents have similar activities on. There was relationships with the cattle that had been applied as nerve agents to prevent the warble fly along the back line. But that we have to look at Ki Bono, who benefits from saying that the eating meat is infectious, and we look at Agenda 21 and so on. I think people have to understand that the last bastion of natural protein is the cow, and certainly the rancher is producing protein from lands that can't necessarily produce anything else.
All right. Well, thank you for your call. Clint, did you want to respond?
Well, you know, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that I'm an expert on this. All I'm doing is bringing other people's research, the FDA, everybody else's research to the forefront. And my, because, you know, I can't get a research grant. I can't get respect from the establishment of medical, pharmaceutical, scientific, because I don't have their little piece of paper that says I passed their tests and I've been indoctrinated into their little for-profit business, okay? What I'm saying, and for you to start for you to start out by saying that I'm a latecomer is I find that kind of insulting, actually, that I spent all this time putting this together, and you're going to say, oh, someone else already thought of that. Well, how the heck would I do research if someone else hadn't already thought of that? So I guess what I'm trying to say here, my friends, my people, that I care about, the Earth, is that I can't get that kind of research grant. Those research grants are only granted by the Rockefeller Foundation, by government, who's in a position to not want this information out there because the liability and lawsuit potential for this is huge. So putting aside the concept of trying to get people to go vegetarian, whether it's good or bad, this is not my concern. This is not what I'm trying to get people to see. What I would like to see is for people to demand that this research go forward, because if this is indeed the origin of disease, how are we going to know it if we sit here and argue about it with no money to support the funding? That's what I'm here to try to get people to do.
Right. All righty. We're going to a break. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Deanna, and our guest today has been Clint Richardson. His websites are realityblogger.wordpress.com, Clint for P, and thecorporationnation.com. We have very limited time. Let's take one more phone call. Let's take Irene in California. Irene, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Yeah, hi, Clint. If you put in and Google the children in Africa, zombies, you will find out there's a baffling disease, and it came out in March, and it's just turning kids into zombies. And the parents have to tie them up to, you know, things in the house, and they're chewing on the rags that they're tying them up with. And it's also a nodding disease. So, of course, this is coming from the vaccinations. And I don't know how long it takes for them to start acting on the brain and doing this to them. But they're unaware of their surroundings. They're turning into zombies. They chew on things. And, you know, it's just a matter of time before we see our kids doing this. And the vaccinations need to stop. It was only 10 in 89. Now they're up to 36. It's 46 with the military. And then with your milk issue and the pasteurizing, when you pasteurize it and heat it up, it is no longer a calcium. It turns into a liquid protein, the worst protein that you could put in your body. So that's why raw milk is so good for you. And also when you drink regular milk, when it goes, it's in the stomach, it has to pull calcium that's already in the bones, bring it back to the stomach to break it down. It's defeating the purpose. And I learned this when I was in a pharmacy technician school, you know, and all of medical does not make sense. I cannot believe that these people don't question it while they're in school. It does not make sense. None of it does.
Well, if you question things in school, they kick you out of school. If you refuse to vaccinate at school, they don't let you, you know, continue with school. So I do want to say one last thing. And that is, you know, the conclusion here, it says that these things cannot die. They're indestructible. They're, you know, but one thing that hasn't been tried is one of the most suppressed technologies out there, which is Royal Raymond Rife's technology with frequencies, light frequencies. And I'm actually wondering if that might be the cure for an incredible amount of diseases out there, because if we can actually kill these prions, which are either the cause of or the result of, which are causing or helping to cause these diseases, degenerative diseases, and it's nothing but a frequency that will kill them, as Royal Rife showed in his research and his scientific efforts, which was then squashed. And, of course, I know a few people who've continued his research. But I actually have the sinking feeling that the only way to control this and to possibly, you know, eliminate this issue is possibly Royal Rife's and Tesla and everybody else that contributed to the research and scientific possibilities of frequency and energy. I have a feeling that that's probably the thing that we should focus on. But again, the people, you out there listening, are going to have to spread this. And people are going to have to realize that they're not trying to cure this. They're not trying to do anything about this. In fact, I would guess that they're trying to find more prion-related diseases that they can classify and create drugs for. But we need money. We need something to do. If anybody wants to start an organization or something, please let me know. I'll be the researcher.
All righty. We've run out of time. Thank you so much, Clint, for being on the program.
Well, thank you for indulging.
All righty. And I'm sorry we could not take the rest of the callers. Have a good weekend, and we'll talk with you on Monday. Bye-bye now.